into two categories, inquiries and complaints. Inquiries, according to the police department, are simply sort of low-level complaints that don't need to go to the Citizens Police Review Board. What are the basis for the decision as to what constitutes an inquiry and what constitutes a complaint when somebody comes to the police department complaining about something? Well, apparently that's in the hands of the police. Ah, but that's not the law, you see, and that's not what the law is in Santa Cruz or statewide. So the police chief was violating the law throughout the last year. What was his response when Citizens Police Review Board member John Malkin brought this to the public attention? He changed the law. He declared that a new set of orders would be in effect, which did distinguish between, quote, complaints and, quote, inquiries. What was the Police Review Board's reaction to this astonishing usurpation of power, this incredible violation of the separation of powers, this affront to citizen control of the police department? They did nothing but dither and babble and hold hearings. Well, now they're getting worried that because of all their dithering and babbling, John Malkin, the member who brought this to their attention, has resigned. They're going to lose even the weak, minor position they now hold. They haven't held any public hearings on any complaints, not one of the over around 100 complaints they've received. They've sustained a small fraction of the complaints. They've had no independent investigations of any complaints whatsoever. And their complaints, when they reach the records, when they reach the files, if you go into the Citizens Police Review Board office at 905 Cedar Street, you will find nothing in the files that mentions the names of any officers. You can essentially get no information from their files because the police department has swallowed up the complaints and declared they're now all part of the personnel file and so confidential. All parts of the personnel files of the individual officers. Police Review Board responded by meekly asking for an independent city attorney, counsel, independent of the city attorney, since the city attorney also defends the police department. What did they get? They got this woman from the county who had previously been defending cops. What is her response to a lot of these questions? To support the police department. One might have expected this, given the incredible level of arcane, petty analysis and digression that has been going on in the Citizens Police Review Board month after month, year after year here. Nothing has been happening except, of course, the number of complaints to the Police Review Board has dropped off. Now again, what is all this all about? Well, Michael Hernandez is a man on the Police Review Board, probably the closest to the police department, in my opinion. And we're going to be talking, you're going to be hearing an interview with Michael Hernandez on a question around police review. Most recently in the police review situation, as I said, the chief came back to the board saying, I've decided there'll be complaints and inquiries regardless of what the law is that the city council created. And the police review board said, wait a minute, we don't want this. We want to know more about it. Maybe you can tell us what these inquiries are that you have had for the last 6 months, things you've called inquiries that we think might be complaints. We'd like to see them. I'm sorry, said the police chief, I can't let you see them. And what did Michael Hernandez say? That's just fine. Chief knows what's best. What's good for the bluegrass with their guns at the top is good for everybody else here in town and good for us. Of course, I'm not quoting him verbatim, but that's the force of what he says. Let's hear Michael Hernandez now talking about another issue around police review.
Now, what about police review? Anything coming up on Monday that you want to note? Have you checked the agenda?
I know the agenda. The chief has said we are reviewing the general orders.
And, there was some controversy last summer about this whole issue about what's a complaint and what's an inquiry, and is the chief following the proper procedures? And of course, the commission and the chief have come to a parting of the ways on some issues. What are those issues, and what's your prediction about what's going to happen on Monday?
I couldn't tell you what's going to happen. To tell you the truth is, I'm going to be there for 1.5 hours, and then I have to leave, so I won't even be able to be there throughout the whole...
with the NAACP for
that's right. Yeah. You know, so that's, you know, it's something that's come up. I have a lot of support in that community, and I need to be there. You know, Police Review Board, you've been a critic of Police Review Board for a long the time. As a very, very honest human being, and that's what I consider myself, I can tell you one thing, Robert, is that what goes on behind those doors is very fair, absolutely fair. Sometimes our hands are tied by laws that are above us, but what goes on behind those doors is absolutely fair. I have yet to meet a person in there who wasn't absolutely fair.
Now, what about the criterion for a public hearing? I've talked to you about this before. Berkeley, for example, has public hearings, and much of the credibility of Citizen Police Review lies in the public seeing the process of the hearing, but in fact you guys have met continuously behind closed doors in spite of repeated requests. I know I've requested public hearings on numerous occasions for a public hearing. So, are you ever going to have a public hearing on any complaints?
Well, as of often now, we haven't had a procedure for public hearings. We have just sent a procedure back to the council.
You find that a little strange? You've been around for a year and a half. I mean, and there's no procedure for public hearings.
It's a complex issue. A very complex issue. We developed
people getting abused by police is a pretty simple issue.
We developed them over a year ago, and so it's taken a year to get to this point. So, you know.
So in other words, you have said that you won't have public hearings because there's no procedure for
public hearings. And I can't tell you if we'll have public hearings. It's up to the board to decide that. Seven people decide that. One person doesn't decide that.
Have you ever voted for a public hearing?
Yes.
But only rarely, right? I think you mentioned two or three cases.
I have asked for a public hearing.
And how many of the 90-odd cases that have come before you?
I think I'm the only one who's ever asked for a public hearing.
You're the only person who's ever asked for a public hearing? John Malkin has never asked for a public hearing?
I don't remember John Malkin asking for a public hearing on the board.
Oh. Alan Sowell has never asked for a public hearing?
I've never heard anybody but myself ask for a public hearing.
Well, then I've got to commend you for asking for a public hearing. How many times out of how many cases did you ask for a public hearing?
I asked for a public hearing in one case that very, very, very much concerned me. There are other cases that have concerned me very, very much too, but as a group, we have decided that it was, I mean, you know, because someone requests a public hearing doesn't mean we get one. You know, if seven people decide this, not one.
Now, you have procedures for a public hearing, but you have no criteria. It's all simply the whim, fancy, or just desire of those seven members, right? There's no specific guidelines.
In one respect, you may be right. There are specific guidelines. They're based. I mean, when I requested a public hearing for a case, I requested a public hearing case that I was concerned about. You know, that this particular case concerned me. Okay, mm-hmm. Other cases haven't concerned me enough to ask for a public hearing.
There was no criterion you could use. You couldn't say we have certain criteria for public hearing. It has to be an issue of force. It has to be an issue of a minor. It has to be an issue of sexual abuse. There are no specific, explicit criteria for public hearing.
No, I think the sensitivity of the case has a lot to do with it for me. You know, what kind of case it is.
Of explicit criteria that let's say I'm applying, my case is coming in and they say I should have a public hearing because it meets the criteria, but there are no criteria for it to meet. So I can't really make any argument just except to say I want a public hearing.
You're right.
And are you going to change that?
There's seven people on the board.
Are you going to attempt to change that?
We have. There are seven people on the board.
You're one of them. Are you going to attempt to change that?
I am running for city council. I may not
be
on the board. Very
you long. Are on the board.
Yes, I am on the board.
Are you going to attempt to change that while you're on the board?
No.
I appreciate your candor. I hope you change your mind.
Okay, I may do that too. But for right now, until we actually see a document that says this is your hearing procedures, and we get an idea of what it has not been.
So no, you're still going to leave the public in the dark as to what criteria they can use to seek a public hearing, and it's going to be completely within the discretion of seven individuals as to decide whether they want a public hearing or any kind of criteria.
That isn't my statement.
That is your statement. You tell me there are no criteria for a public hearing. And you don't want to change it.
That is your statement.
Are there criteria for a public hearing?
Yes. Yes.
Explicit criteria?
No. There's not explicit criteria. You know that. You already know that.
Well, then, if there aren't criteria, explicit criteria, what the hell are they? I mean, what are they, mystical criteria that nobody knows but the seven members? I mean,
Robert, people ask.
Turned off by Michael Hernandez, the Citizens Police Review Board. I may have to call the mayor. mean, I think he's willing to go on record.
It's okay. I just want to tell you something. We had a case come up that was a very serious case that concerned me. The seriousness of the case concerned me. I asked for a public hearing.
I know you did. I understand that. I approve it. I like it. I'm glad you did.
And I was voted down.
I understand. But what I'm telling you is that another issue. What are the criteria that we, the public, can know we can come to you and say, we want a public hearing because A, B, and C is happening? And you're saying there are no such explicit criteria. Is that correct?
You can request a hearing on any case.
Right.
Whether it's based on the seriousness that the board reviews, in the case of the board reviews. I need to go, man. My wife is just calling me.
And so he went. Michael Rutkin spoke with me briefly at this kickoff rally, which I hoped, of course, would be a kick-out rally, but to no avail. I asked him again whether he would consider an amnesty for sleeping ban tickets, as Terrence Hallinan and Mayor Brown have done in San Francisco. He apparently didn't want to do that, although he said he would talk to me later. But after the demonstrations at City Council 4 days later, on the 10th, when seven people chained themselves to City Council chambers and dozens of others chanted, "Homes, not jails," and "We demand the right to sleep at night," Rutkin apparently has had second thoughts, and he has not returned either of two messages I've left at his office. And of course, it should also be noted that I've heard nothing from Celia Scott or Catherine Byers regarding the 11 questions I put to them at City Council meeting on the 10th, asking, for example, what has happened to the blankets locked up by the police department, how much is it costing to prosecute people under the sleeping ban, how many prosecutions does the city intend to pursue under the sleeping ban, how much does it cost to open up a bathroom at night, what are the availability of spaces in the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, and how many people does the city actually estimate are homeless out there who are then coming to the attention of the police department because the city's law has declared that anyone sleeping within city limits after 11 o'clock at night is, by that act alone, or the act of covering up with blankets, therefore a criminal. No answers from Celia Scott, no answers from Catherine Byers, and of course, no answers from Mayor Mike Rutkin. Nor have we heard any positive response from Eleanor Eisenberg, the great civil libertarian, though it must be admitted that by the report of candidate David Newton Silva, at the Thursday Forum of the Downtown Association had its hate fest, as David Newton Silva describes it, against the street people and homeless people down at Cathcart and Pacific. Eleanor Eisenberg did make some abstract statements about civil liberties and the rights of poor people. Now, she would only translate that into specific statements about the rights of poor people to sleep at night, then maybe some of us could really get behind her. It seems to be she can't quite do that, instead she said she supports the sleeping ban.
You're Michael Newsom Sheridan. Because you're that man about the international scene. What happened with an execution in Salem, Oregon?
Yeah, there was an execution in Salem, Oregon last night. What was last night? September
5th.
September 5th?
Yes.
First one in 33 years. The man was convicted of killing three homeless people. So, he died for it. Is that justified?
No, capital punishment is never justified. Maybe killing somebody in a circumstance where you have no choice is, that's just my view.
What goes around comes around. That don't work. It's working in North Carolina right now.
Oh, you mean with Hurricane Fran or whatever it is?
Fran, yeah. Right. I heard one reporter say that there were miles and miles of demolished luxury beachfront homes. If you've ever been to North Carolina or Virginia, then like places like Myrtle Beach and Virginia Beach, the homeless and hitchhikers are treated like rats and dogs and criminals over there because those are luxury areas.
Well,
is that
naturally.
Another one? Hilton's Head? You don't see any raggedy, scruffy people around there because the police will run your ass out of town quick.
Well, I would hope so.
So now, these homeless people are kind of more equaled out. There's a lot of the rich people got homeless last night. What goes around comes around.
That's a nasty way of looking at it.
It's good stuff.
You bitter man, you. Thank you, Rolling Thunder. Protester Pat Ring
No comment.
He has no comment.
So, Robert, the truth is rumors I heard that you were schmoozing with Mike Rodkin today and actually went to dinner with him.
Actually, the truth of the matter is we did share some space together. Mike and I, of course, have always tried to make the best of a difficult situation.
Well, I had heard that you went down there to shout him down and disrupt his event, and he ended up bribing you off with a plate full of food.
Brownies, actually. His brownies were very tasty. I think there must have been some tranquilizers in the brownies.
Really? Some, yeah, okay.
Well, I wasn't going there to shout him down. I was going there to, as Scott Kennedy would put it, get other people arrested.
Uh-huh. Right on. Yeah, did you?
No, not yet. I succeeded in that because Jim Costner's Revolutionary Coalition has successfully isolated me from the mainstream.
Well, yeah, a lot of people think you're a security risk.
I'm definitely a security risk. I mean, look at me. Do I look secure to you?
No.
You know, that was rather insecure, actually.
Yeah.
Do I get a hug?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, security risk, Robert, with that tape recorder. Going all the time.
Exactly.
Scare a lot of people away.
I do. And you know, it has been said, for instance, that you yourself are quite annoyed with the speech I made at City Council pointing out that there is a court order against you being within 100 yards of the City Hall, right?
Yeah, well, it's not like a court order. It's an OR release order.
That's true.
And
theoretically, you could have your OR revoked on one of your charges.
Yeah, when I
That's
go back.
That's Kangaroo Kelly's bullshit.
No, it's Judge Salazar.
Sorry, Judge Salazar's...
So it's no problem since I stay away from City Hall.
Of course. You would never be seen anywhere near City Hall.
Yeah.
Like Greek music, for instance, locates us being
it's
at least
100 yards.
100 yards away. And certainly the music is 100 yards away from City Hall.
Uh-huh.
And you're a man of the music.
Yeah.
You are
with
the
judge told me not to come to City Hall, so I'll have to obey him.
Of course.
He's the judge.
Right. And a good judge, too. Actually, a commissioner.
Yeah, very good judge.
Commissioner Salazar.
My favorite
guy. To Anthony Patanjo. Any tickets today?
Banjo.
Banjo Patanjo. Any tickets, Banjo? Patanjo. You Banjo Banjo.
He doesn't know?
Yeah. You know?
What?
Tickets. You got two tickets, or somebody got two tickets. And when were they?
Been yesterday morning. Then a couple days before that.
And yesterday morning, anybody else get tickets but you?
No, Christina and Tama got ones.
You, Christina, Tama on Thursday morning?
Yeah. Yeah, the policeman said, Officer Evelyn. Since we had a sign out here, it said 187 days being here, that we were camping, so he decided to give us camping tickets.
I see. Yeah. He believed the signs.
Officer Evelyn confiscated that sign today.
Oh, I see. Well, that's reassuring. Perhaps he felt a certain fondness for one of the sign at home, like a keepsake. So Evelyn confiscated your sleep on Thursday morning, and what time this morning did he confiscate the sign?
I don't know, 8, 9, 10 o'clock, I don't know.
Did anyone get arrested or cited?
No.
Has the sign reappeared to replace that sign? I see a no peace sign.
That's not even illegal. It's only illegal if it's leaning up against something, a structure. That's leaning up against a milk carton. It's legal.
But the milk carton itself is a container for storage. Hence, the entire demonstration
water.
Water. Well, storage of water is an example of a violation of the injunction punishable by...
Okay, my reading of this is food. Water is not food, such as Sergeant Seeley said when asked if preparing making a peanut butter sandwich would be a violation of the injunction. He said, well, that's cooking.
I said, well, Seeley has a sticky situation.
In the kitchen, you know, because
I
think you have to cook a peanut butter sandwich.
Cooking a peanut butter sandwich, yes. Well, you see, we are picking up bits of information about the vigil in spite of ourselves, and the secrecy is being broken through. Example of my conniving approach. Let's see what Gideon has to say. Gideon, do you understand a sign was confiscated by Officer Eveleth today? Is that correct?
I didn't see it.
Any tickets in the last couple of days?
Not that I know of.
Tama got a ticket yesterday morning?
Yes, she did.
As well as Anthony and, did you get a ticket?
Rock and roll.
Well.
Did he just shake his head?
He shook his head.
He said, did a radio interview and he shook his head.
Well, I shake my hand, so I'll shake your hand if you'd like.
And this entire dialogue took place in front of City Hall right after the a Rapkin kickoff rally on September 6th, Friday, nearly, well, more than 2 weeks ago. We're already behind the times on these tapes, folks, but you're getting some idea of the kinds of things that are happening at City Hall, and you're hearing the actual voices of the people who are there. The next actual voice you're going to hear on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, is that of activist Keith McHenry, who has gone to Europe on the Rent is Theft tour. But before he left, he gave us an interview, and this is that interview.
Keith McHenry, it's September 7th, 1996, a bright and sunny Saturday. How you doing, Keith?
Not too bad.
So you're headed for Europe if you can get enough money together, and until then, you're kind of keeping an eye on all the different attacks on food and bombs, from Arcata to Eureka to Whittier to Calgary to New York. What's happening with attacks on food and bombs?
Well, they have been widespread all summer long. It's pretty amazing. And the most recent things, I guess, is, well, Carrie Chandler would be going to Port down in Whittier, California, I believe on the 18th of September.
What's she charged with?
She's been charged with holding a picnic without a permit. Originally, she was charged with serving free food without a permit and under the California Health Code, but they changed it to just have, when they discovered that the people she was feeding were actually people that were friends of hers, and then in one case, the person that lived with her, they ended up having to change it to being serving, sharing food at a picnic. Without
picnicking without permission, eh?
Yeah, without having
to get a note from a mom, that sort of thing?
That kind of thing. Then the other things that happened is that there's been a number of attacks by the police against people trying to start the a food program in Eureka, California. It's part. Some of the people are with Arcata, California, Food Not Bombs, and apparently they've been stopped every time they attempt to unload their vehicle and to try to get the food out. The police have interfered with their ability to actually do the food. And I haven't gotten a call back from those people.
Where was this, Keith?
Specific details, but...
Where was this?
This is in Eureka, California, Northern California.
Uh-huh. Arcata is still going to court, right? They've been...
They go to court on the 20th of September in a... The word that I have from Arcata is that there's fear that there will be a pro-Food Not Bomb city council elected in November. Mm-hmm. Just like San Francisco, Food Not Bombs has ended up figuring prominently in the electoral politics area, and not that Food Not Bombs actually encourages or discourages people one way or the other necessarily from...
Well, Food Not Bombs is not big into the electoral political scene.
Yeah, no, it's not really our interest. It's that's mostly just a bunch of bunk, but we have every 4 years the mayor of San Francisco is ousted, and it's we're always accused of being the person who the group that was responsible for the fact that the
quite an honor, Keith.
Quite an honor. So for having no interest in electoral politics, we have a lot of influence on it.
However, in San Francisco, as I understand it, from what I heard, the support for Food Not Bombs and the Board of Supervisors has actually dropped, or at least for Food Not Bombs. Sympathetic issues, like the Board of Supervisors 2 or 3 years ago was passing recommendations applauding Food Not Bombs' right or encouraging Parks and Rec to allow Food Not Bombs to serve in the Civic Center Plaza and denouncing Jordan's Matrix attacks on the poor. Now we have Willie Brown, the new mayor, and the Board of Supervisors is ominously silent on what is essentially the same series of attacks going on, in fact, increased arrests of people for sleeping and being outdoors. What do you make of this?
Well, yeah, this is Democratic Party politics at its finest. San Francisco, you know, at the time when we were getting support from the Board of Supervisors, that's because they were antagonistic towards the mayor. The mayor was trying to steal their power totally. That was Frank Jordan, and there was not a lot of common interest between much of the Board of Supervisors and the mayor's office. It was more to do actually with a threatening of their own personal political power than it had to do with any kind of well-meaning by the Board of Supervisors, some of the same supervisors that were supportive, or at least allegedly supportive during that time, are actively hostile now, like Kevin Shelley, and that's because, you know, now his people are in the mayor's office, so he's, you know, wants to stand behind Willie Brown, and one of the best ways to do that is to make no comments and make no movement towards human rights in San Francisco. They all talk like a really good game, but they're certainly not going to do anything. For instance, there's an active campaign right now by Religious Witness with Homeless People to stop the destruction of the Presidio housing that is, some of which was already bulldozed, and this sleight of hand manipulation of the federal laws by the people here in power in San Francisco, and then in particular by Pacific Gas and Electric, the Gap Clothing, Bank of America, and so on, who have in their pockets politicians like Supervisor Kevin Shelley and Michael Yockey and so on, and who have been able to get the city government to willingly support the transfer of essentially one quarter of the land area of San Francisco to the corporations to create a theme park to support corporate interest in this area. And as part of that scam, they've tried to buy out the left, so to speak, by giving a building to the Tides Foundation, which is a fundraising organization that funds progressive causes. And that's the one little bone thrown out there to squelch any protest against what is obviously a travesty when thousands and thousands of people are living on the streets of San Francisco. They're being regularly arrested, but they're destroying 1,400 perfectly good housing units just because they just feel that low-income people shouldn't be frequenting the neighborhood that is so close to Seacliff and the Lake Street area of San Francisco. It's really just completely crass class politics. You know, you don't want these low-income people going over to the Presidio to live might walk around Seacliff and make all the people there uncomfortable or something. You know, it's
gentrification, the way of the future.
Right. This is, of course, a national phenomenon. That's why the attacks on Food Not Bombs in Arcata, where the people there are facing charges, is because they don't want poor people in Arcata Plaza, where the shopping is. Or it's just like the People's Park struggle that is constantly going on, and now the dispute over the free box
in Berkeley,
California, and that fight has gone on for years and years, and has gotten very ugly when the issue of class conflict became prominent in 1988, and you can see that. I was in near Duke University in North Carolina, and they have a little shop area that's sort of similar to Telegraph Ave in Berkeley, and they got all the anti-panhandling laws there, and they've got there's a lot of homeless people living in that area, and they're always trying to drive them out of the area, and there's a conflict that is brewing even in that part of the country. And I was in Ottawa, up in Canada, and they had all this anti-panhandling laws up there, and they were trying to drive the homeless people from that.
Now, Keith, I heard there was a small victory. I heard a bad report from Skidmark's Bob Duran, a musician from Just Kidding, an IWW delegate, who went to the convention in Salt Lake City, Utah, and he mentioned that Pioneer Park had been closed by police, and he gave me a graphic description of how that was done with an eye to removing homeless people, and then when Food Not Bombs attempted to feed in the park, maybe simply walked into the park, police did use gangbuster tactics to remove them or to threaten them to leave and so forth. But I hear that you told me that was reversed by the city council shortly after Bob's experience, which was in the last week or two.
Right. Well, this is an interesting area. Pioneer Park is near the train tracks, and it's been there's a Salvation Army nearby, and there was going to be like low-income housing across the street from Pioneer Park, But because the Salt Lake City won the right to have the Winter Olympics in year 2000 or whatever it is, year 2001, something like that, suddenly that part of town has now started to become a popular area for gentrification, and the building that was going to be low-income housing has now been bought by the chairman of the Olympic Committee, Salt Lake City Olympic Committee, and is now being converted into a luxury hotel. And when I was there several years ago when the health department first approached Salt Lake City Food Dot Bombs, and that crisis blew over, but at that time it was just a large square park with some trees in it, and quite a large number of people shooting speed actually in the porta potties and stuff, kind of shocking. But it was kind of the area that the government had allowed so-called homeless people to congregate. And the Food Dot Bombs like cheerfully shared food there every week for like 3 years without incident until recently. And apparently fences have gone around parts of the park. They built, when I was there earlier this year, they had built a band shell, and they had these brand new toilet facilities, but they were locked and no one was allowed into them. And they had put new paths down and so on. And it was clearly part of a plan to so-called revitalize this neighborhood. There was a dispute over Pioneer's Park. They're going to try to change the name of the park to Pioneer Square and undesignate it as a park. This is similar to the Montreal.
Also similar to Mayor Rotkin's attempt to turn City Hall into a park, which would make it subject to closing hours and so facilitate the eviction of protesters.
Right
now in their, I don't know, 190th or so day of the City Hall sleepers vigil against the right, almost the right to sleep in Santa Cruz. And it was also done here in Santa Cruz at the town clock.
Right. See, this is a manipulation of laws. It's like when you look at the bigger, step back, look at the bigger picture, it gives you a really good impression that, like, fuck these governments, really, essentially. They're a bunch of, they can make up any old, kind of bureaucratic changes they want. It comes down to it. It's just control of the population. And that's what's going on in Salt Lake City. But fortunately, there was a lot of pressure, two areas of pressure. One of them was that the Mormon community was angry about the changing of the square, because part of the ideology of changing Pioneer Park to Pioneer Square was that it was going to allow commercial vending around the area, and particularly opening a whole series of nightclubs that were going to, and because the Mormon Church was opposed to the use of alcohol, they came out in a big way to protest this at the city council meeting last week. Food Not Bombs really didn't even get its protest off the ground in that regard of trying to stop the park from being declared a square. But what did happen was that the Food Not Bombs people were able to also get the ear of city councilors and say that they were being harassed for sharing food, and they said this publicly at the meeting, and it was kind of an embarrassment. So one of the city councilors agreed to meet with Food Not Bombs, and then was able by the end of the next day to get convince the rest of the government, I guess the mayor and so on, that it was unwise to attack Food Not Bombs, and they were given, they were told that they could go back to sharing food at Pioneer's Park, and they wouldn't have to be worried about facing arrest.
Wow, this is quite a change from, that sounds like the fastest action I've ever heard of by a city council, and quite a contrast with San Francisco, Santa Cruz, Arcata, Whittier, anywhere else where Food Not Bombs has ever been prosecuted. And one would think that San Francisco, with its more liberal board, would be able to take that kind of action, because you were telling me that in San Francisco, if I may jump back there for a moment, even though Food Not Bombs has only had one arrest this year, yours,
right,
in the first day I was sent to jail for my 60-day sentence for serving free food, which I served only 28 days, about a three-year-old conviction, because of your participation in a oatmeal and raisins vigil outside the Hall of Justice. In spite of the fact that that was the only arrest in San Francisco, nonetheless, you've reported confiscations of food, harassment, vehicular tickets that were unnecessary, and general police obstruction when FoodNet Bombs goes to a political event in San Francisco. Is that still true?
Yeah, that is definitely still true. There's, when you, if you, you know, when you arrive with a truck and you unload your table and food and so on, you're surrounded by the police and given a whole series of tickets, and they threaten to tow your vehicle and so on.
When was the last time that happened?
Now, that hasn't happened because I've, since middle of August, but that's largely due to the fact they've been out of town since then. So, you know, I have not tested that since the beginning of September. And I would expect that the same thing would happen. My sense is that the police, of course, are really no more supportive of food not bombs or political protests than they were before I left town. I don't fundamentally think that there's any change. We're going to find out some interesting things, I think, soon, in that we're going to be protesting the Democratic Party on Willie Brown's kind of phony summit that he's having for homeless people. And this is, it will be happening on Friday, the 20th of September at 5:30 at the Undemocratic Party headquarters, which is 1000 Van Ness at O'Farrell. And it's our anticipation that we'll be probably harassed in the same kind of way as we usually are.
Coalition on Homelessness be joining you?
Yeah, and this is the night before the Homeless Summit, which is on Saturday the 21st. Also on the 21st at noon on Saturday in San Francisco at Dolores Park, there's a protest against police repression in general in the prison industry. And, you know, of course, we're like the state with the most prisoners. You have, you know, slave labor is a very big, prison labor is quite the issue in California. And repression, which is very, right now, of course, people in Golden Gate Park and in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood are under constant repression by the police. And the Mission has been very brutal. The Mission Police Station has been jacking up young people and really trying to press the local population there very badly. INS has still been very tough in the Mission area. And now, of course, with the new little changes in the laws, there's potentially going to be pretty bad conflict this fall in immigrant neighborhoods in San Francisco. You know, it's with the health department announced that they were going to continue in defiance of Pete Wilson's order to provide health care and prenatal care to immigrant families. But we should, you know, my expectations are is that the state will try to step up INS, you know, will encourage the INS to be more active in this area. We'll work with the INS to harass people on the streets. And so, and there's already a lot of intimidation against people that are particularly Hispanic people and African-American people in this city.
Any protests planned around this? There's an NAACP candidate forum coming up at Santa Cruz on Monday, and I'd be happy to bring that information to them if you have a specific...
The only real protest around that I know of is the broad protest on the 21st at Dolores Park in
21st.
Of noon. On Saturday the 21st. There's also, we have a meeting that is coming up on it's going to be the 18th of September, Wednesday, at Artist Television Access, the plan of protest. That's on Valencia Street. Our ATA is at 21st and Valencia, 992 Valencia Street. And everyone's welcome to attend that. This is, particularly people from Santa Cruz are encouraged to come up here for that, because we're trying to build a national day of protest against police repression on for October 22nd, which is the anniversary of the arrest of Sacco and Vanzetti, which are two anarchist immigrants in Boston who were framed for murder because of their political activities, and were executed even though the person who did the murder had pled for their acquittal. and admitted to killing this...
That's new news. I've never seen that in any of the accounts of Sacco and Vanzetti.
Oh, yeah, no, it's very well documented that he wrote letters, and he was jailed. He got jailed for another incident and was at the same jail.
It's back in 1927, we're talking about.
This is in the 20s, and they were executed in 37 by Judge Thayer.
37?
Yeah, I believe so.
Wow, I thought it was 27 when they were executed.
I think they were arrested in 25, and they spent a long time in prison. The guy that did the murder became friends of theirs and was very moved to see that when their families would come, and had worked to try to get them free. So that was because he would be in the visiting room at the same time as Sacco and Vanzetti's families would be visiting them.
Yeah. Well, let's jump from Sacco and Vanzetti, but I think that there's a police review board meeting here in Santa Cruz on Monday, September 9th.
Uh-huh.
They meet once a month. They do their little charade and then disband. They still haven't got any procedures for public hearings, or I think maybe they may finally have procedures. They've never had a public hearing. They sustain, upwards of 95% of complaints, of police actions,
right,
regardless of the complaints that come against them.
Yeah, we got the same thing here with the OCC in San Francisco, the Office of Citizens Complaint.
There is some publicity in the Sentinel, I should say, in the San Francisco Chronicle today about the... some hearing for four police officers before the police commission regarding the gay bashing that went on, a year and a half ago or something?
Right, and I think that's really important because it shows that the gay community, because it has been organized, because it's been under repression and for so long, it shows that political organizing works. It's not nothing to do with whether it was just or unjust attack on the people at the AIDS benefit. It's largely due to the fact that the government fears the political power of the radical gay community.
I'd like to know from you, you probably can't tell me now, but next time I contact you, and hopefully I'll be able to interview you a few times before your trip, which is coming up, I guess, on the 20th.
The 19th, actually. I'll be Thursday.
Europe, yeah. The 19th?
Be the 19th at 9 o'clock, I leave here.
Oh, well. Then we better get to you, because I'd like you to maybe... If you can issue some kind of place where people can write in Whittier, Arcata, and Eureka, or even here in San Francisco, to get police to stop harassment of food servers in those communities, that would be useful, I think, for those who are still concerned about the issue.
Yeah, I think that I think also the general, getting involved in the October 22nd protest.
Got a phone number for that?
And, you could call here at 1-800-884-1136, and... we would send you information, and if your group or if you yourself would like to endorse that day, we have this endorser.
Sure, I'd be happy to endorse it. I think it's a...
Every radical, it's unbelievable. It's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people now endorsing this and groups all over the country. The IWW, the General Assembly that endorsed it unanimously in Salt Lake City, and... the Food Now Bombs chapters all over the country.
If they want to endorse this, can call 800-884-1136, or if they have organizations that want to endorse, they can also contact you there.
Right, and that's the thing that about it is people often ask, well, where is the protest? Well, the protest is wherever you and your friends organize it, and we want it to be like a free...
This will be on October 22nd?
Right, we want everyone to come up with their own strategies of what's best for their community. Now, some places, they might want to have a torchlight march, and some other places may have, I've heard a lot of high school students particularly want to walk out on that day and block traffic, and then there's people who are going to, have their church have it be the subject of the sermon the Sunday before, so there's all kinds of things. One thing that we're encouraging is everyone to wear black on that day and make it known that the reason that you're wearing black, if you're at work or something, this is on a Tuesday, is that you're opposed to police repression, and we're trying to get as much media attention as possible. And we can see, for instance, it is working to a certain extent. The fear of this massive protest has helped encourage coverage of new recent scandals in Philadelphia about police repression there, and it's becoming very clear that the police are working for the transnational corporations against our interests and for powerful local merchants, and as is clear in Santa Cruz.
Ramona Africa, when she came through here, the MOVE activist who secured a significantly large settlement from the city of Philadelphia after the mayor and police chief firebombed her house back in 1982, was it, I believe? She endorsed the City Hall sleepers protest in Santa Cruz, which is, of course, a protest in front of City Hall I mentioned earlier.
Well, she's also endorsed this October 22nd protest, speaking on behalf of it at a press conference in Philadelphia outside of the district attorney's house on September 25th. Mm-hmm. The district attorney who was responsible for attempting to have Mumia Abu-Jamal killed because of his political ideas. That would be the journalist that was reporting on the murders of the MOVE family in Philadelphia.
Right, he's become world famous, a prisoner of conscience, along with Geronimo Kraft.
And Leonard Peltier, who is still behind bars, and they're still concerned to try to free him. Clinton had announced when he was running for president of the United States that he was going to call for his freedom, and was going to pardon him and release him. That's something that still needs to happen, is to start freeing political prisoners. And there's been a lot. The Democratic Convention, there's numerous protests against the fact that there's so many political prisoners in jail here in the U.S. And David Dillinger and Andy Hoffman, which is Abby Hoffman's son, were arrested at the Justice Department offices in Chicago. And there were in protest to the fact of so many political prisoners. And then, of course, there was a lot of police repression in Chicago during the Democratic Convention, raids on offices and confiscation and destruction of video cameras.
None of which reached the media, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it reached the free radio airwaves, and it'll probably be in a lot of alternative, fanzines and newsletters and stuff. But correct, the mainstream media has whited that out effectively. And
that was Keith McHenry. I'm Robert Norse. This was Bathrobes Pierce Broadsides. You're listening to 96.3 FM. Give me a call at 423-4833 if you think you want to add anything to this show. And stay tuned. And please, if you have a place for Free Radio Santa Cruz, we need a station. Give us a call, 423-4833. Thank you for staying with me. Hope to be with you again soon.
Who am I? And I condemn this man to slavery.